Welcome to The Other Side of 40. My name is April Grant, and I'm here to help women make positive changes with their lives after the age of 40. Let The Other Side of 40 become your community to find inspiration and support to start the next chapter of your life. Hello, and welcome to another week of The Other Side of 40. Today, I have Terry Boyle McDougall. She is an executive and career coach and CEO of Terry B. McDougall Coaching. She helps high-achieving professionals remove obstacles that keep them stuck so they can enjoy more success and satisfaction in their lives and careers. Before becoming a coach, Terry was a longtime corporate marketing executive where she led teams, developed strategies, and advised senior leaders to drive business results. She is the author of Winning the Game of Work, Career Happiness and Success on Your Own Terms. She is also the host of the Marketing Mambo podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
April Noel, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Yeah, my website is terrybmcdougall.com, and I'm also pretty active on LinkedIn, and my handle is Terry B. McDougall, and my dog is about ready to bark out the window. I knew it. Sorry. Okay, let me get her down. Sorry. Okay, you ready?
Go ahead.
And then my podcast, you can find that at marketingmambo.net.
All right. So grateful to have you. We'll start with my signature question. What is your awakening moment? And you mentioned you had two. So walk us through what happened.
Yeah, well, I guess my first awakening moment around the age of 40 was I had my third and last child when I was 39 and three quarters. So I turned 40 when my daughter was about 3 months old. And so that was sort of like a new awakening. I mean, a lot of people look at 40 and, you know, realize that it's sort of like middle age and all of that. And with me, I was just so busy with, you know, with a baby and it's a joyous time that I wasn't really thinking about that. But shortly after, and when I was 41, I actually had a pretty big promotion that moved my family halfway across the country. And that really started a time for me when I was really stepping into my full potential. I finally was, I guess, stepping into what I had always been working towards, which was an executive level role where I was getting paid very well. And I had, authority and leadership in the company that I worked for. So that was exciting. I did that job for about 12 years. And then as I got into my 50s, I guess I sort of outgrew that role in a way. And I had for probably about two or three years in my early 50s been really reconsidering what my longer term ambitions had been. I'd really been looking for a long time and thinking that, oh, I want to be a chief marketing officer. And quite frankly, as I got closer and closer to that level and got to see what was involved, I just really started reconsidering what I wanted out of my life. And, was maybe feeling a little uncomfortable in terms of, you know, whether I could really show up and be authentic in my career. I felt like I was really sort of paying a high price for, you know, the quote unquote success that I had. There were some things that were going on at work, kind of a restructuring that enabled me to leave without having another job. And this was after, like I mentioned, two or three years of sort of feeling like the job just wasn't really a good fit for me anymore. And it kind of being torn between really wanting to take off and do something different, but feeling really afraid. I mean, at that time, well, I have three children, I'm married and I have three children, and I was really the primary breadwinner in the family. And it was very scary to make that decision between being true to myself and also feeling like I, you know, could live up to the obligations as the breadwinner for the family. And I took a chance on myself, and I really examined what is it that I'm good at and what do I like to do. And that was really the beginning of me deciding that I was going to take kind of a radical left turn and get certified as a coach and start my own business. And so I guess for the last 4 years, I've been on this journey as an entrepreneur and an author and now a podcast host. And it's exciting. It's fun.
So
even though it's scary,
So let's go back just a little bit. At the beginning, you mentioned that you got the job that you thought was pretty much of your dreams after you had a baby. Did you apply for that job prior, or was it a new job?
It was a new job. And, you know, there's a whole story behind that that I'm happy to share. Yeah, it's slightly humiliating, but I'll tell it. I worked at a bank, and I had been sort of the right-hand person to the head of marketing for a division of this bank. And, you know, I was sort of his go-to person if he had any big projects, whatever. And I was really in a position to understand very much about like what needed to be done to run the department. And I was a leader within the department under him. And he left the company, and I applied for that job. And because I had worked at that company for 8 years, I suppose I didn't really think that I needed to do anything special to prepare for the interview. I thought like, oh, people know me, and they're looking at me as the leader in the same way that I'm looking at myself as a leader. And that was really my first mistake. I did fine with the interview with HR, but the second round of interviews was a panel interview with several peers within the greater marketing department. And it'd been a long time since I interviewed, and I did not really prepare. And I went in and I bombed. I got really nervous. I was like palm sweating. I kind of describe it as like a flop sweat. It was horrible. And so I did not advance to the next round, even though I really thought that I was sort of the heir apparent. And in fact, when my boss left, I stepped up to informally lead the department. I mean, because it was several months between when he left and when they even started the recruiting process. So it hurt to really be performing in that role and not be really considered for it. And because of that feeling of shame and humiliation, I actually decided to hire a coach to help me with how I presented myself, to get more comfortable talking about my accomplishments. I mean, she really helped me to realize that I needed to step up and sort of, you know, in some ways, like do a makeover on myself. So I went out and I bought nicer clothes. I got my hair done, you know, to really start looking like that level of leader that I wanted to be. And interestingly enough, they went through the whole recruiting process and they offered it to someone who turned it down. And so they actually started the recruiting process all over again. And I applied this a second time. I did much better this time. I was actually one of two finalists. It was me and an external candidate. And unfortunately, once again, I was a two-time loser.
Oh, wow.
And I did not, you know, even though like the final round of interviews was another panel interview with the CEO of the division and his two top executives, I was very comfortable in that. I was very happy with how I performed, but I think they wanted new blood. Yeah. And so again, it felt bad, yeah. But the universe has a way of rewarding those of us who prepare. Yeah. And the day I found out that I did not get the job, I got a call from a recruiter who had an opportunity that was a good fit for me. And that started a period of a few months where I was actively interviewing. And by the end of that, say 3 or 4 months, I had two job offers and I was actively interviewing with another organization. And I decided to take one of the two job offers, which moved me here to the Chicagoland area. The job that I got was way better than the job that I didn't get.
Yeah.
So,
you failed upward.
I failed upward. And I think that you know, the heavens shine, you know, smile down on those of us who prepare, right? I did not know what I was preparing for, but the fact that I didn't, you know, I fell on my face a couple times. Well, I'd say one time I fell on my face. The second time I was well prepared, and I just lost to, you know, another candidate that they thought was more attractive, right? It's not, yeah. I think I did a good job with how I comported myself, but you know, I prepared and I was rewarded, and it was good. It was great. I'm very happy with the way that things turned out, even though it was a little painful along the way.
Yeah. I was actually in a situation in the hiring side of, in a case like yours, and it really sucks to be on that other side because you want to root for that person. And in our case, that person knew that the position was open for a much longer period, which it sounds like yours was too. And so it's like, you had all this time to prepare. You didn't prepare. You had like, you knew before we put out the recruiting notice, you knew before anything. And then you come in and you're just not as attractive when you hear the other people. It's hard. You can't justify choosing mm-hmm. the internal person. It's like, we love you though.
It was, you know, I mean, I think in some ways I needed to be hit over the head with that, you know, sometimes you need to, you know, perform above where you are to be perceived as that leader. And quite frankly, I am very, very happy with the way it turned out, because for me to come into a new role as a leader was much better than me moving from, you know, a senior marketing manager to the leader role, because I would have had to overcome people's, you know, preconceived biases of knowing me for 8 years at a more junior level.
Right.
And being able to walk in as a leader, people just saw me that way from day one.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you were there for a while and then you went to a new company. And both of these are in Chicago, or you moved again?
No, I was in, the first job where I bombed, you know, I had a great career at that company, but I just didn't move up to the next level.
Yeah.
I was there for 9 years. That was in North Carolina. Okay. And then I was recruited to come here to Chicago, and the company that I worked for here, I was there for 12 years. I had four jobs in the time that I was there. And, you know, I'd say probably 10 out of those 12 years were great. And the last couple of years, I was just in a role that I actually did not want, but I was told that this was going to be a job that I was going to move into. And I never really felt like it was a great fit for me. Mm-hmm. And so I think I sort of outgrew the opportunities at the company, right? It was a great run. I mean, 12 years at one company, it's a great run. And I had fantastic opportunities. I really loved it, but you know, sometimes it's just like your paths diverge.
Yeah. So what made you want to go into coaching? I mean, you had a lot of skills. It sounds like marketing is your background. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to take on working with other people in the mm-hmm. marketing arena?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, my own experience with hiring coaches. I had hired coaches a couple times in my career, and it really helped me. And then as a marketing leader, you know, the areas that I worked in were pretty challenging. And I often was mentoring and coaching people on my team on how to be more effective with our internal clients. And, you know, I got feedback from people that they appreciated my mentoring and my coaching, that they thought I was good at it. And I found that, you know, when I moved between roles, that sometimes people on my staff would want to come with me, you know, so that was very fulfilling for me. And I don't know, I think maybe part of it is I'm a big sister. I'm the oldest of four girls. And so I think maybe it's just, you know, I was just brought up to be that person helping people, and I love it. And when I was thinking about leaving the company, I really looked at myself and said, what are you good at and what do you like to do? And I thought about what my motivation was even within marketing. And my motivation was always about helping my internal clients. So really coming in and consulting with them and understanding what their needs were. And my satisfaction was not necessarily from, you know, running a successful ad campaign. Like, yes, that was great. But my personal satisfaction came from knowing that I helped the leader of that business achieve his objectives. It was really the personal part of that that I really got my own fulfillment from. And so, you know, I think that I just felt like I was good at coaching. I enjoy it. And I thought it was something that I could leverage all the experience that I had in business to help other people.
So you mentioned that in your bio or in the notes that you work with high achieving women who are successful, but not satisfied. Mm-hmm. In what ways are they not satisfied with their role? Is it, I need to stop doing compound questions.
What do I mean by that? Right. I'll tell you what I mean by that. It's that if you looked at these people on paper, you would say, what do they have to complain about? Like, they've got the VP title, they work for a great company, they're making a lot of money. But yet when they come to me, they're like, not happy. They're paying a very high price for that success. Maybe they're feeling very anxious, they're stressed. Maybe some of what's going on at work is leaking into their personal life. And my objective, I mean, honestly, I kind of look at, you know, quote unquote success. If you're not happy, but you've got all of the trappings of success, that's not really success. Mm. And, you know, as a professional, you know, I'm an ambitious person, and I certainly was when I was in my corporate career as well. It's not that I wanted to be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to give it all up and I'm going to, you know, move to India and move into an ashram and, you know, meditate all day, right? Like, professional success is important to me, but I think that there's a way to balance being authentic, showing up as yourself, and being unapologetic about that with being successful professionally. And I think that a lot of times those of us who have been high achievers throughout our lives, in some ways we become kind of addicted to external validation. And what that means is that we haven't sort of developed that inner wisdom, and we're not relying on it. We're not looking at ourselves and saying, well, what do I think about this situation? And do I have the confidence of my convictions in this? And so, you know, I really try to help people to develop that and, you know, I guess to develop their confidence in their own judgment, and sometimes to see situations for what they are. You know, I see a lot of times when people are not, you know, there's something going on at work, right? Like, maybe it's a sort of a toxic situation, that they'll blame themselves for it. You know, and because they're used to working hard to get the results that they want to get.
Yeah.
And when they're not getting the results, they're like, okay, I have to work harder. And then if they still don't get the results, they blame themselves. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's important to step back and look at the bigger picture and see yourself within the context of that and see, okay, is there something I can do differently to get a different result? Or, you know, maybe it's even time to move on. Like, in my situation, you know, I struggled for a couple years trying different things and trying to influence within the organization. And I finally just woke up and realized that it was probably time for me to move on and do something different.
Yeah. So you said something a couple of times. Well, you said two things a couple of times. One was not being authentic. So what does authenticity mean when you're in a work environment?
You know, I think that it means being willing to confident enough to show up as yourself and not worry too much about what other people think. And I mean, obviously you've got to take cues. You've got to understand what the expectations are, you know, not come in and be like the bull in the china shop, but to have balance between respecting yourself, understanding that you have value, that your perspective means something, and seeing it within the context of what's going on at work, and not, you know, subjugating your own judgment or your own or yourself for work, because a lot of people sacrifice so much to be quote unquote successful, and for what, you know, for what ends?
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the other thing, the sacrifice to be successful. So I know for me, I stepped out of the workplace years ago because I saw my attitude change with my family. So I was not a happy mom or wife and mm-hmm. working a full-time job because, you know, in our society, and I think culturally, pretty universally, that women bear the brunt of housework and childcare. And my husband wanted more children. And I was just like, there's just no way. Like, I'm stressed out. I have one. Mm-hmm. And if you met my son, he's like the easiest going kid you'd ever meet. And you're like, how do you get stressed out with him? And I'm like, because there's just so much anxiety within me that mm-hmm. even though he's a great kid and he doesn't do anything wrong, we didn't have any major issues with school or anything like that. It was a lot and it was a heavy burden. And then on top of the housework, on top of that, and it ends up being the best decision because the next daughter is insane. Love her, but she, especially.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about the second kid, because I had much same experience with me.
she's high energy, and she's mommy's girl. So she is. Mm-hmm. She spent the first literal year attached at my hip. And I was real nervous about having our baby because I was like, I don't know if I can let her go. She's like, is she going to get off my lap long enough to breastfeed? So, but that sacrifice for success. And then, so my background's in law, and one of the things that I saw is I didn't really see a lot of happy women. Mm-hmm. They were good. They were really good. But, you know, when it came to the work-life balance, I just didn't see a lot. And they would just work more and more hours. They mm-hmm. would not be, really along the lines of what you said, not be valued for their work. One other point that it's always fresh in my mind with, you know, and I'm not trying to talk politics or anything, but the patriarchy is real.
Absolutely.
Working at a law firm, it was during the subprime, you know, mess, and firms were really restructuring and people were moving, and the firm I was working for lost almost all the partners in the department. I was in corporate, and there mm-hmm. was one woman who held it down. Like, she held on to as many clients as she could. And these weren't her clients. These were the other attorney's clients. Mm-hmm. She pulled them back, kept the department afloat. And then when the partnership came up, they said, maybe next year.
Yeah.
And it was just like, wait a minute.
Right.
The senior ranking attorney in this department, and this is a mm-hmm. major international law firm, and this is for one of the major locations. And they were just like, that wasn't good enough. we'll talk about it next time around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And I've heard a lot of stories similar to that. I worked in financial services, and, you know, especially I worked in B2B areas, which were very heavily male dominated, and, you know, working in marketing where the majority of the people on my team were women, it was a really interesting power dynamic, and actually lots of great opportunities for coaching. Yeah. I definitely cut my teeth in a very challenging area. I kind of feel like I got sort of like a PhD in how to navigate corporate politics and with some of the things I had to deal with.
Yeah. So now that you're in this coaching realm, what is the number one issue that people come to you for? Like, what would make them choose TBM coaching?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that people, a lot of people that come to me do so because they know that I had a long and successful corporate career. And I'm not just a coach. I was a corporate professional, and they don't have to explain to me some of the crazy things that happen. You know, I can remember at the job that I, where I didn't get the promotion that I applied for, I was going to therapy for a while, and I kept explaining to my therapist like some of the crazy things that went on at work, and she would like always shake her head. She was just like in such disbelief about some of the things that happened, you know. And I think that for anybody that hasn't experienced some of the crazy things that can happen in the corporate world, to be able to come to somebody and explain something, and not only do I understand it, but a lot of times they don't even have to tell me very much. You know, they can start to like sketch out a situation, and I'll start asking them questions, and they're like, were you a fly on the wall? How do you know this stuff? Because I've seen the patterns many, many times. So I can empathize. And, you know, coaching isn't about advising, but, you know, I've certainly seen a lot of the issues that people are challenged with. I understand.
So what would you say women should do when they're in their positions? What advice would you give someone who comes to you? They have lots of talent and they really are tired of just working harder. What would they do?
Well, I think that the first thing is to, you know, one of the things I see a lot of times with women is that they are they're working harder in hopes that somebody's going to validate them. And I say, you can validate yourself. You don't need to work harder to get somebody else's approval. You know, step back and recognize that you have value, period. And, you know, look at the bigger picture. You know, I see it very often with people that I'm working with, that if they're not getting the results that they want, they decide to go faster and work harder and do more. I'm like, no, step back, right? Look and see, where can I get leverage here? You know, what are the most important things that I should be working on? This is a generalization, but I work with men and women, and a lot of times women tend to be a little bit on the perfectionist side. Like they feel like they haven't done a good job unless they've checked off every single thing on their to-do list. And with men, they will triage and they'll say like, what's the thing my boss really cares about? I'm gonna like double down on that.
Yeah.
And I'm not really gonna worry about this other stuff. I'm gonna figure out who I can delegate this to. And that's how you get promoted.
Well, it's interesting that you said that, because I read some statistic. I don't remember the exact numbers right now, but it was something along the lines of, especially white men will apply for a job when they only meet 60% of their job requirements. I believe it was 60.
Yeah.
But women and people of color will, on the scale, it's 75 and up. Like if they don't meet at least 75% or more, they don't even look at it and move away. Mm-hmm. And it was so disheartening, because you also know that these men are getting these positions. Mm-hmm. And when we're checking all these boxes, I think you're right. I mean, you are right, but it's thinking about figuring out the solution to the problem and not checking these boxes that someone put on a job application or, you know, job search. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what do the person want? Figuring out what they want and fulfilling that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's really about, first of all, knowing you're smart and you have value. You don't even have to ask. All right. Like step into that, step fully into your power and show up that way. And don't be apologetic about the fact that you're valuable, right? Like none of these guys are doing that. They're like, hey, I'm all that in a bag of chips.
Yeah.
Well, hey, ladies, you are too, and probably, you know, even more so, because you can multitask, right? You're probably multitasking when you shouldn't be, but you can do all of these things, right? And you care. Yeah. So just recognize that you do have value and show up. and be unapologetic about it.
Yeah. So, okay. So you, that was two things, recognize their power and how do they maximize successes in those fields? Because there's always this temptation to do more. There's always a temptation to work harder, do more, show up more. How do they assert themselves to be able to take some time for themselves or less time at work?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of putting boundaries in place, you know, because the thing is about the modern day career is that the demands of the career will expand to fill whatever time you give to it. And the reality is that you could work 24/7, 365, and you are not going to be able to do every single possible thing, you know, so rather than, you know, moving forward and trying to do more, step back and say, how can I work smarter? Where should I invest the amount of time that I've decided to put into this? Where should I invest it to get the maximum leverage and output or impact? Be smart about it. And don't feel like because you can't do everything that you're not valuable. Because nobody can do everything. And if you really observe leaders in an organization, like I've been in, you know, very senior level leaders' offices that didn't even have a computer. Like they didn't do anything on the computer. Their assistant, of course, this is banking, right? It might be a little bit old fashioned, but their assistants would print off their emails and bring them into them. Like they were like, I'm too, you know, I have to think. I can't figure out how to use Outlook. You know, I'm going to like scribble on a piece of paper and give it to my assistant now we're not all there, right? But they're making these conscious choices about how they spend their time. They're not saying like, oh, I can just do that. You know, I see it with a lot of people, men and women, where sometimes they have a hard time delegating because they'll say to themselves like, well, I can just do it faster. I'll just do it. Listen, that guy, yeah, of course he could respond to that email in 2 seconds, but he's like, forget it. My time is way too valuable for that. You know, I want to use my time and my energy for the highest value work that I have. And there's an opportunity cost to doing things that are lower value work. If I've got the opportunity to either be selective about what I invest my time in or delegating certain things to other people, I'm going to do that. That kind of discipline is what very successful leaders do.
Yeah. And what it made me think of is I know a very successful local businessman and he had a smartphone. He upgraded a smartphone for all of 6 months and he went back to what he calls a dumb phone. Mm-hmm. And he did that because it was distracting. He wasn't as productive. He wasn't getting as much done. Because all of the apps took him away from paying attention to what needed to be done.
Right.
And so I saw the similarities of the banking, and he wasn't in banking, but he had his computer at work and he's like, I don't have a tablet. I don't take it with me. But when I'm at work, I don't have any extra things on it. And I just go to work and do what I need to do. And then when I'm home, I'm present.
Yes.
Allows me to be present because I don't have a phone ringing and dinging and email checking when I'm home either because I don't have a mail app on my phone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's being very selective about where he invests probably the most valuable thing that he has, which is his time and attention.
Yes. Yeah. And he has a family, I think, of 4 kids. And he wanted to be present when he was home. He's like, I work hard. I would work hard when I'm there. And when I come home, I don't want to think about it. So it was a lesson, even though we joked around with him, it was very much eye-opening and it made a lot of sense listening to him. Well, was there anything that you'd like to add or do you feel that we didn't cover during?
Well, I mean, I probably did cover this, but I think it's worth reinforcing you know, a message that, I mean, this is my mission, is to have people recognize that you are good enough, you know, like you're good. Okay. Know that in yourself and step into the power that you have. And, you know, I know I said it before, you have to balance the expectations of what you need to do at work, but, you know, learn to validate yourself. You know, you can do that and you can do it unapologetically. You know, we're all here for a reason, and let's find that reason and show up fully to do what we're meant to do.
Yeah. It reminds me actually of this other interview I did, which two things that you said, Lolita Walker, if you're following me, check her podcast, her episode out. She talked about the power of the pause, which is kind of along the line of what you're saying, step back and think and reassess. And she also talked about her I am folder, and the I am folder are all of the positive, it's actual external validation, but it was a reminder to continually lift yourself up in those hard times. So when mm-hmm. someone wasn't giving the external validation, you had all these other wonderful things people had said about you that you could keep close to your vest, and you don't have to mm-hmm. feel bad because you know other people said some wonderful things about you. And I just found that interesting and good. Is there anything you want the listeners to do from this interview?
That's a good question. Well,
listen to your podcast.
Yes, definitely come out, especially if you're a marketing nerd like me. I have a lot of very interesting people who come on and talk about various insights and perspectives within the world of marketing. We always have really fun and interesting conversations. You know, and I think thinking back to what you were saying earlier about people not, you know, feeling like they had to check every box before they applied for a job, you know, I'd say go for it, right? I always thought about job descriptions as a wish list.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, a lot of times there's just not a person out there that's going to be able to check every box. So if there's something that seems exciting for you and you think you could do it, apply for it. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
But this is, and I'm getting back to this. This is how I grew up, and I don't know where I got it from because it wasn't from like a teaching anywhere. But I grew up for until I had kids. I don't know what kids did to me. I would just say go for everything, and my thought process was the worst they can say is no. But if right. I didn't ask, the answer is already no. So
right.
at worst, I would be exactly where I am. And so I would pursue pretty much anything. So
yeah, I'm
getting back to that spot.
yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of times, you know, people just are, they like to see people that are ambitious and want to go for it. And, you know, I think a lot of times people recognize themselves in somebody who raises their hand and they're like, hey, why not? We'll give you a shot.
Well, thank you very much. And to the listeners, give yourself grace, and tomorrow's another day. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Other Side of 40. You can find us at our site, theothersideof40.com, and on Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Other Side 40.